listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're on Reality Check Radio. It's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Remember, you can send me a text at 2057. Email me inbox at realitycheck.radio. Well, I had previously recorded, we're a bit late putting it up, Mr. John Ansell on the 20th of November. And I'm recording this on the 12th of December, sometime later. And we'd left Phil, our hero, hanging. Literally, because you recall that Phil walked in front of the Hikoi as it marched through Masterton backwards, holding a New Zealand flag, and he was a counter-protest. He wanted New Zealand to come together, not be divided under our flag. For his efforts, Hikoi leaders grabbed his flag and they broke his pole. He was able to hold the cloth of the flag. Then that was taken off him by another Hikoi member. And then the police, as I recall, it was four burly men, pushed him to the ground. He got a gash on his forehead. They handcuffed him so tightly that they cut the circulation to his hands. And he had to beg for the handcuffs to be eased so the circulation could return to his hands, and he was charged. Can you believe this in our great country? He was charged with inciting violence. We're on a bit now. We've brought my good friend, Mr. John Ansell, back to give us any update. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rodney. Well, I think the charge is now officially disorderly contact with the potential, or words to that effect, of inciting violence. Ironic, because the potential was realised by the violence done to him.
Well, he incited it. He was a victim, inciting violence by being present.
By being present with his country's flag.
You can do that also. You can incite violence by walking down the street carrying a phone.
You can incite violence by existing, I find.
Yeah. Just or asking questions.
In today's world.
So,
yes.
What? And that's where it rests.
Well, he's been to court, had a hearing. A very unusual situation took place outside the court where the accused put on a barbecue for his supporters.
I'm loving this guy, Phil.
He's a great guy. You really should be talking to him. He, if we didn't have Phil, we'd have to invent him. He's one of those people as a symbol for our nation. For 2 hours before the court hearing, he was wrestling with his barbecue and his sausages and making sure everybody was fed and breaded and buttered and all that. And, this is the kind of caliber of guy he is. And he's been charging about Masterton and the Wairarapa with his flag, inciting reactions, positive and negative. From a range of people.
What happened in the court?
In the court, it was a bit of an anti-climax. Before the court, actually, some policemen came over. First of all, a gangster came over. Phil invited him for a sausage, but he didn't seem to want to get any closer. He'd sort of obviously been delegated the task of, I don't know, providing some opposition or finding out what this pakeha was up to. Turned down the opportunity for a chat and a sausage. But then a couple of police came over and sort of schmoozed Phil. I've got that on video too, because I was live streaming it. And but they turned up in court. It was almost as though a conspiracy theorist might think that they were sent over, and there were policemen filming from the courthouse.
No.
And I think it might have been our MP, our MP's wife, who might work for the police, driving past and filming as well, we think, possibly.
Oh, that's good. Well, who's your MP?
Mike Butterick, in this case.
Who?
Phil had some Mike Butterick, the National MP. Never. There's also Kieran McAnulty, and I think Celia Wade Brown, the former mayor of Wellington, is by virtue of all the green malfeasance, she's now a member of the Green Caucus. So we're well represented around here.
Oh, yes.
But Phil wanted to get some information. He wanted to get Butterick's attention, and he wouldn't answer the door at his office. So Phil drove up his driveway and got him at breakfast. And, you know, this is the sort of guy Phil is. He doesn't take no for an answer and exercises his full rights. Got into court. We were checked. We had our IDs. Our IDs had to be presented. Now, Phil's understanding of that is it's illegal, or certainly not normal for the court supporters to have their IDs checked.
Absolutely not.
So that was interesting.
And when you say they were checked,
well, I had to hand over some form of identification.
Did they record it?
Yes, my driver's license. I think it was photographed. I can't be absolutely sure. It all happened in a bit of a flurry.
Because that's what they're wanting to do, of course. They're wanting to work out, I would think, the co-conspirators.
Yes.
Because you'd be white supremacist.
I'm a white, yes, of course.
And hate merchants.
Because I'm bald, Rodney. We're all white supremacists.
We are. You're bald, old, and white.
Yeah. I've never struck that at the other court cases I've been to. I've been to Liz Gunn, but I never had to present any ID until this time. We got in, though. It was a procedural thing. Phil identified himself. He represented himself.
Good on him.
And he identified himself as a living man. He certainly is alive.
How do you mean he identified himself? Is
well,
this
it's
like
the sovereign. I get confused. I get told off if I don't get the right word. You know, there's common law, natural law, admiralty law, sovereign law. Whatever that is, that's what he identified as, a living man. I can't really run that argument. I've heard it many times. But he, you know.
He gave his name.
People who know what to say in those situations can get the judges running for cover using admiralty law. You'd better interview somebody else about the specifics of that. But Phil did that, and the judge was respectful. The judge was not surprised. She's obviously struck it before. And she just made a date for another of the interminable hearings that precede these things, these actual trials, which will come presumably. The next hearing is the 17th of February. There'll presumably be another barbecue. I might sing my Mr. Constabully song this time.
Yes.
I'm getting better at that. I've been singing at my open mics and getting good reactions. So, yeah, we'll do
and
that.
And this is at the Masterton District Court.
District Court. 17th of February, don't know what time.
And the police were there and there were Crown prosecutors there?
Yeah, the same two that claimed to be experiencing all this for the first time and chatting up Phil and seemingly getting on well, what's this about, were actually in the court hearing, funnily enough. So their curiosity really must have got the better of them, or perhaps they were, you know, plants to.
Perhaps.
You can't trust anyone these days. I trust you, Rodney, but we can't trust anybody else apart from you these days, but especially those in a blue uniform. You cannot.
I'm not sure I trust myself.
Well, do you have reason not to?
You know, it's like you're living in such an upside-down world that,
yes,
you know, you think, am I actually sane?
Mm.
Like, it's inconceivable that you'd be sitting in New Zealand and discussing this. I tell you what, I had a very strange experience. I went to my daughter's school assembly for the end of the year, high school, and what you and I would call the third form, and listeners would know as the third form. It's called year nine now. And I sat there, and it was absolutely lovely. The children, or our students, I should say, were all polite. They were very well behaved. They were respectful. The teachers and the principal were well turned out and spoke well. There was maybe a dozen words of Maori, which was okay. I was expecting a diatribe. There was a karakia, don't know what it said, but everyone stood for it and the kids all went through it and wrote. But apart from those two things that we've come to expect, it was very decent. And it surprised me, you know, because you've become so used to turning up to events and being harangued and harassed and spoken to for 50% of it, like at the primary school, and language you don't understand. We've had the primary school where my wife had to stand at the back because she was a woman. And not a Maori in sight.
No.
So we forget that there's these little pockets of decency because we can overly focus on the madness of it, if you know what I mean. I came away quite hard. I should also say about these kids, right? I asked them, my daughter, what they thought of a particular kid. And she said, oh, well, I don't know, but everyone says he's a wokester.
Right.
Which is that term of abuse?
I would like to see a better word. I think it's too soft a word for what it is.
Well, I think they can also change that to a word that starts with W and puts an A in it, but add on to wokester. But they have reacted very sharply to the stuff they're being fed. And in fact, the ones I've got to know are more hardcore than I was at that age in terms of
that's the hope, I think, is
conservative
that
principles. Because the children rebel.
Yeah. I think I'm hoping the great hope is the children are brighter than the teachers. The children are more questioning than the teacher. This is supposed to be an education system, but clearly it's an indoctrination system. They've hired, in many cases, the worst of people to brainwash the children. I'm hoping the children are smart enough to react against it, yeah.
And a lot of positive. And, of course, you have the likes of Phil who stand up to it dramatically and provide that rebel leadership that these kids will know about. Mm. By the way, the kids all revel in Trump.
Do they?
Well, some kids, it depends. It's a bit like society. You know how in my younger daughter's year, she's 2 years off high school, she's writing a project on Elon Musk, and everyone, including the teacher, are upset because, and when she questions them why they're upset, it's because he supported Mr. Trump.
Right. I'll tell you something interesting. There's a boy at Pukekohe High School, and they were asked to do posters about political situations. They did them all. They just about all did them about Black Lives Matter. This was a bit back, further back.
Yes.
And so did he, but he did one opposed to Black Lives Matter, and it wasn't allowed to be shown on the wall. Now the interesting thing about this boy is he is black. He was a South African boy.
Black. He wasn't
in a
Maori,
New Zealand
he was
school,
black.
And he was opposed. Black. He was black African, and he was opposed to Black Lives Matter. And the teachers didn't know what to do because you know you get a point for being black, but you have to lose a point for being anti Black Lives Matter. So what do they do with him?
Well, he's actually got to lose 4 points because he's an Uncle Tom.
Well, yes.
So all it's like Maori or blacks in America who are conservative. They come in for a particularly brutal time. So this is going to be fascinating, this case. You will continue to live stream it. For people that want to live stream it, they can see it, to see the live stream, they can see it on your Facebook, John.
Yes.
John Ansell, A-N-S-E-L-L. We will be picking it up next year. Can you give Phil our very best regards? We appreciate him leading the Masterton Rebel Alliance.
We're thinking of doing something on Waitangi Day.
Oh.
Which perhaps should be renamed again New Zealand Day. To perhaps ask New Zealanders whether they are New Zealanders or Aotearoans.
Oh, very good.
You know, it's a chance to wave that flag. And because the Maori people are very strong behind their, you know, there are different kinds of Maori people just like anyone else. I used to call them very helpfully the grievers and the achievers. And of course, many sided with the Crown during the wars in the 1860s, many loyalist tribes. But for those Maori who want to be essentially, to want to actually take over this country, which is what we saw the Hikoi as representing, not in opposition to a bill, but a takeover of a country by 1/6. For those who want to do, they do their marketing very well.
Mm.
Te Pāti Māori, or Te Piti Pāti as I call them, they are doing what they're paid to do by their supporters. They are sticking it to the white man.
Yes.
Very effectively. So, ironically, I admire them for that. I don't admire their ethics. I don't admire their haka. I don't, you know. But they're doing their marketing. Perhaps the non-Maori population might like to stand up for a change and say what they think of their culture. What have the British done for us? I'm just looking around the room and seeing that. They did that. They did that. That. There was a contrast I put on my Facebook page of All You Need Is Love being sung by all of the great British pop stars fronted by Paul McCartney.
Mm-hmm.
All You Need Is Love on the one side, the haka on the other. Which culture are you more proud of?
Mm.
And I think 5/6 of New Zealanders ought to be a bit more proud than they've currently shown.
Well, we know. Of this. We know that the majority of Maori don't agree with this. We can't say about the younger ones because they're being indoctrinated. Have you got any estimate of the number of Maori living in Australia?
I'd last heard 100,000, I think, but I wouldn't rely on me.
Well, that would be another number, right, that they're not buying into.
It was they had to get away from their country to live as equal citizens.
Yes.
And I admire the ones who don't want to take money for being Maori. I admire those people very much.
Yes. And I know several who are very successful business people. And funnily enough, proudly Maori, like people can be proudly Scottish, proudly Irish, proudly so, but succeeding and on their own efforts, having been Christianized in those early years. While they now may not be practicing Christians, they are swimming in a Christian ethic. And that's one, again, the wonderful things of history. When you look around the room and say, what did the British do for us? Like in Monty Python. Well, one of the things they did was they brought in human rights.
You know, I think they brought in a particular concept in Christianity. No one said this as far as I know, but I read the transcript of a meeting that might well be called the Kerikeri Conference, 1825. It's not been given that name, but there's the Koimarama Conference of 1860, which I think everybody should read. Read what the chief said about the Queen's sovereignty there. They couldn't have been more ecstatic about it. In 1825, there was a meeting between what I call the white men and the black frocks, the missionaries, and the biggest and baddest of the chiefs, including Hongihika, who said things like, my heart is hard, I can't help it, you know, and he wouldn't be able to because he was raised from birth to kill people and eat them. And it was like attending an AA meeting reading this transcript because they were saying these chiefs respected these white men in black frocks eventually. They eventually got through to them. They didn't in the early years, but eventually got through. And he was saying, look, we know you don't want us to go on any more raids. Yes, no, please don't. You might get killed. Well, I don't think so because we've got all the guns. But, you know, we'll just do one more. That was Ngāpuhi. We'll just do one more and then we'll have a bit of a think about it. We know you don't like the cannibalism thing, but, you know, Dad did it and Granddad did it. And I thought, yeah, I like chocolate a bit too much. Other people smoke too much, drink too much. If you were in that world, if you were in that world, bred to kill and eat as the sort of aftermatch feast, yeah, you'd be like, I'm not really trying to mock. I'm saying, I'm trying to understand. And I think the concept of Christianity that might have penetrated eventually and made them turn from cannibal New Zealand to Christian New Zealand there, I think might have been the concept of forgiveness.
Yes.
You know, we don't have to do utu anymore. Utu is an interesting word because you've got your U bucket, your T cross there, and your other U, and it's like the scales. And utu is like a balancing.
It's a perfect word.
If I insult your wife, you are duty-bound to kill me and my entire tribe and eat as many as you can. It's a slight overreaction, I would have thought, but that's how it was.
But it's interesting. Have you heard of the historian Tom Holland and his book Dominion?
No. Sorry.
I am reading it, and it's well written. It's not without its criticisms that people have said. So, Tom, this is a great background to this because it's not just Maori. He, from the age of a boy, 10 years old, like kids were fascinated with dinosaurs, he was fascinated by the Romans and the Greeks. And he just ate it up and became a classical historian. And in fact, he had something that he said, you know, secretly, I was on Pilate's side. And he liked that strength, like we all do as kids. He loved this projection of strength and power. And he became steeped in it. He's published several books, popular books, when I say that, not, you know, books written by an academic for a general audience about Roman and Greek culture. And then he said as he got older, he became horrified by it. Because he said they thought nothing of killing and enslaving. They thought nothing of infanticide. They thought nothing of raping your own slaves. Nothing of it. They thought nothing of taking naughty slaves and crucifying them.
And well, it certainly wasn't restricted to Maori.
No. And then he said, he suddenly realized, why do I feel that? And he said, here I was, an atheist, realizing that I was totally inculcated in Christian values. That every person is made in the image of God and created equal. And that it's how we care for the weakest and most vulnerable that determine who we are. And so he wrote this book called Dominion, which is about how the teachings of Jesus and building on the Old Testament transformed the world. So much so that you can be a rabid Marxist atheist and not aware that you're espousing Christian virtues and values.
Right? Talk me through that last bit.
Well, you believe that in fairness and the weak should be looked after.
Oh, I see. Right? The best of communism.
Yes.
It's not a bad philosophy until you get to human nature. No, it just doesn't work.
But the point of that is, it's not about, well, I've got the gun. You're not part of my tribe. Why wouldn't I shoot you in each other? I mean, as I can, if you get my point. And he traces it. So he says, and then he's in the process, he's become a Christian. And he got this great line because he said, we talk about human rights as though they're a given. But he says, historically, they never were. You know, the idea that you can't just be killed or someone just can't kill you, that's not fair or just. He says, that's not the way of mankind. Wasn't the way of the Maori, wasn't the way of any people, including the Greeks and the Romans. And he said, this human rights is such a radical concept. And he says, people can't ground it. And he says, if you're going to believe in this abstract thing called human rights, you might as well believe in angels. And that founding thing that these rights are God-given. And it's such an interesting thing to me because we do. So even the Hikoi marches, you know, they're marching for justice, if you know what I mean. We know it's going to turn bad, like the French Revolution and like communism, because ultimately underpinning it all is violence. And they haven't got the whole picture. They haven't got a sense of, well, how does a society work? They just want to cause mayhem. And there's no doubt agitators within them who are very nasty, demented, psychopathic people, and the other ones are going along for, quote, justice. But it's such an interesting thing, isn't it, when you think about how the Romans were transformed from within by Christian teachings.
Well, there was
likewise with the Maori.
There was a particular Maori chief, one of the Te Huhus. There have been a lot of Te Huhus, but if I'm pronouncing it properly, which I'm probably not, Te Huhu. But one of them wanted to get a raiding party. I forget what the original slight was that he was responding to, because they could be very trivial slights. To go and exterminate the Whanganui people.
As
you do. And he was from the Taupo area. And one by one, these hard-hearted chiefs turned him down. Come on, mate, we're going on a raid, you know. No, bro, we're Christians now. I'm a Christian now. What? What about you? Oh, sorry, mate. Oh, no, I am too. And three of them turned him down. It's in the book.
It's amazing, mate.
It's in the Musket Wars book I've got here somewhere. One by one, and he had to go sulking back to Taupo. Couldn't get a raiding party. To the prime speaker of the Maori side at the Koimarama Conference of 1860 was none other than the son of Te Rauparaha, one of the greatest demons there was. Some of the things he did to people don't bear speaking about on a family show. But his son was Christianized up in the Bay of Islands somewhere, I think, came down with Octavius Hadfield, I think, a missionary, and more or less founded Otaki. And he actually was brave enough to go down south and apologize for the sins of his father. Very dangerous thing to do. They could have killed and eaten him. That would have been the normal thing to do. But they were won over, I think, by whatever he oozed out as his Christianity. And he lived to tell the tale. And he was the most vociferous defender of the Queen's sovereignty 20 years after the signing of the treaty.
That is colonialism.
And that was the ratification of the treaty 20 years after it. There were imperfections in the enacting of the agreements in the treaty, but from both sides, you see, John Robinson's put out a book about all the ways the treaty were broken by Maori in the 1840s and 50s. And the chiefs knew this, and they were expecting the treaty to be cancelled. But it wasn't. Perhaps it should have been. So we only hear the other side. It'd be very nice if an incoming national New Zealand First Act government would correct the history curriculum. I'm not hearing that they're going to, because at the moment it can be summed up in six words: white man bad, brown man good. That was the legacy of Jacinda Ardern. You would think that a national government would fix that. And if we told the whole history, well, it'd be very interesting for people to hear. Obviously, some of the children that you're interacting with are getting the message.
Well, it's getting it. I get a bit worried because I carpool them and they get chatting in the back and forget you're there with your ears listening. And the danger is that they don't necessarily have a great grasp, and there is a little bit of racism coming in too, right, because they're angry. For example, one of the boys in the car, desperate to go to the Air Force, all he wants to do, it's been his passion since he could toddle.
Better give him some planes, hadn't we?
Well, yes. But scholarships would be nice. They have all these scholarships available for training and flying. None for him. Wrong colour, wrong sex.
Oh, wrong sex as well. That's right, of course. Just thinking of certain
and
naval
incidents. He's a 14-year-old boy that it's shut down to him.
Yeah, amazing.
Because of his race and his sex. Imagine what that does to your soul.
Yeah.
And sense of fairness and righteousness. And then you've been working steadily at school and with his training and with what he's doing to be in the best position to be selected.
Yeah.
And others, he realizes, can get in because of their sex and their race. John, we're going to have to wrap it up there, but please have a lovely Christmas. Tell Phil that we're following him with much interest and we'll pick it up in the new year.
Yeah. Good one, Rodney. Same to you.
You're on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. That was John Ansell, a great wordsmith, a fantastic poet, and a great observer of what is happening culturally in New Zealand, and a man who can see where it's going to go, and he points it out, I would suggest, 10 years too early. And everyone's 10 years on catching up. Or how did this happen? And I know that John Ansell was pointing it out 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And even today, you feel as though he's being, oh, that's a bit over the top, John. Well, we were saying that to him 10 years and 20 years ago. Bang on the money he was. That's Real Talk, Rally Check Radio.
From caps to tees and bags to bumper stickers, we have you covered. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/shop.